ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी। Chapter 3, verse 11. Devan bhavayatanena, devan bhavayatanena, te deva bhavayantuvaha, te deva bhavayantuvaha, parasparam bhavayantaha, parasparam bhavayantaha, shreya paramavapsita, shreya paramavapsita. In this section, these are really verses that are making the student understand the value for karma yoga, what exactly karma yoga is in reference to the creation. So they're verses which are, from a Vedanta or Hindu perspective, relating the individual to Ishwara, to the Lord. Okay. So let's take a look at them. The last verse that we did, for verse 10. Before I get through verse 10, let me just do the Sunday for verse 11. Dehan bhavyata anena te devaha bhavyantu vaha parasparam bhavayantaha shreyaha param avapsyata. All right, let me just do a little bit of a recap here so that we can go into these, to this set of verses. When we say that the Lord created, when we think of the word God, for instance, if you think of the word God or the Lord, we use in Sanskrit, we use the word Ishwara. But even for no matter really, in almost all religions, when you use the word God, you think of the Lord who is the creator of the creation, right? The one who is omniscient, omnipotent, the creator of all beings. And so this, in India, we call God Ishwara, the Lord. Okay? The vision of God, though, in the Upanishads goes into great depth in terms of explaining what is this God? What do we mean by God? And this is how they view God. So I'm going to just give a little bit of overview here about how the Upanishads unfold the very nature of God. And it's being, this nature of God is being unfolded right now in this series of verses so that as an individual you can understand the importance of being with this creation in a particular, in such a way that it brings about a depth of peace in your mind, a depth of harmony in your mind, harmony with, between yourself and the creation. So that's what that's kind of the topic right now in this chapter 3. So now say, if we look at God as a sentient being, which we do, if we say God or Ishwara, you're always going to be saying, well, it's a sentient being, a conscious being. So when we say conscious being, every one of us individuals is a conscious being. So it's, you know what that is in terms of being existent, a conscious and existence. I am and I am conscious. When we speak of God, we look at this amness, this conscious being, as being the very substrate reality of all that is. We could look at it like this, that the conscious being, the very me, the self that is shining in each one of us, that self itself is non-dual, is one without a second, is the very substratum of this entire creation. And so, in fact, God is the self from which the entire creation comes. Often when we think of God as just being an individual in the creation, we'll think of a person in heaven in the creation already who has then created the creation. But actually, if God is just a man in heaven, then the creation is already there, which God was supposed to create. And so when we really, even in Christianity with St. Thomas Aquinas, he's looked at the absolute, if you get down to what God actually is, it gets down to the absolute simplicity of being, are the words that he will use. So in the Vedanta, we talk about that absolute infinite simplicity of being, which is pure consciousness itself. But this simplicity of being, from this simplicity of being, a creation manifests. From the absolute simplicity of consciousness, a creation manifests, with the consciousness itself not going through any type of modification at all, or any type of transformation, or any type of change. And so we bring in a creative material that we call Maya, which is the creative material that manifests in the form of this creation. And that creative material called Maya is, we give an example for it so you can understand what that would be like. Because for myself as an individual, as a human being, I also have this creative material, right, that allows me to have a thought, allows me to have an image or an imagination, which can be so very real, especially if you're on a daydream or if you're having an imagination at night when you're dreaming, right? It's so very real. But this imagination is something that comes from you, right? It's sustained by you and goes back into you. You haven't changed. Your being hasn't changed in spite of this incredible ability to project a dream or a fantasy or an image or a thought. All of it really takes place in your the simplicity of your conscious being, without that being that you are changing in any way. And so when we were doing the guided meditation, that few moments of just recognizing amidst all of the thoughts, all of the feelings, all of the sensations, all of the external sensations that I have through my sense organs, there is this simplicity of being, which is not doing anything. It's not thinking, it's present to the thoughts, illuminating, it's the conscious being present to the thoughts, silently present to the thoughts. I can say they're my thoughts, and I can say it is my mind, right? But even as I'm saying that, that doesn't mean that I am changing to become that. And so meditation becomes very, very useful for understanding the vision that the Upanishads have to give in terms of Ishvara, the Lord, where that very simplicity of being, which is the simplicity of my being and your being and your being, that from that simplicity of being, this whole creation comes. Now, if that is so, then this whole creation itself is a conscious being that we call Ishvara. So what we say by God, by the Lord, it's not somebody that is away from me. It's somebody in which, it's a being in which this body, mind, sense organs is included. And so what that means is that I, this body, mind, sense organs, is a part of this creation, which itself is a sentient being. For instance, if you were to have, if you yourself were to have a complex imagination with many characters in the imagination, then all of those characters would be part and parcel of the imagination, right? And would have the silent self of my, which would be myself, as their self. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I have an imagination, every part of the imagination enjoys my being. Even though the characters in the imagination, if one character was to go up to the other and say, do you know that yourself is really infinite? They would go, what are you talking about? And what are you talking about? Because they don't know that. But that doesn't stop it from being the truth. Right? They don't know it. One of them at some point in their travels might want to know it. And then they might seek out a teacher to teach them this. But until they want to know it, they're really just happy moving around in the imagination, using their own sense organs and their mind to experience the world. That's how we are. We're moving around in this world that seems so different from us, right? Enjoying the world, experiencing the world as we do, until at one point a person might say, what is the truth of all of this and what is the truth of me? That question comes. Once that question comes, then we have something like the Bhagavad Gita. We have something like the Upanishads. And so that, for the people who are studying the Bhagavad Gita, for Krishna teaching Arjuna, for people who are studying this, that question has come. Who am I? What is the truth of myself? What is this creation? What is Ishvara? What is the Lord? And how do I fit into all of that? And so now, in this first part of this text, we're only on chapter 3, but in chapter 2, the explanation really had to do with who am I and what is self-knowledge. And from there, it moved into what type of mind do I need? What type of mind do I need to really be able to have the shanti, to have the peace, to really understand the nature of myself? And so now, in this section of chapter 3, Krishna is talking to Arjuna. Krishna is the embodiment of the Lord. This is a dialogue really between the Lord and the individual, Arjuna. So Krishna is now explaining to Arjuna, he's explaining about ritual, about the Vedas, about values, about proper behavior. Why all of this? Why all of this? Why is it important? Why is all of this important? What does it do for me? Because I can't give all of the history of this right now. It would take too long, but I'll just give a little shortcut, abbreviated history. Arjuna had believed that he had recognized and told the Lord, told Krishna, I come to you now as a student and I want you to give me self-knowledge. He came to Krishna with that. I want self-knowledge. And so Krishna did teach him, but then told him to stay in the world, right? To stay in the world and do his dharma. Do what was really being, what he was required to do as a kshatriya and the warrior class, to do the rituals that were enjoined upon him to do, to basically stay in the world and live his life as he was gaining this knowledge. And this Arjuna threw Arjuna for a loop, because Arjuna felt that, now I've come to you for teaching, I should take sannyasa, I should leave the world and become a renunciate monk, you know, and only focus on this teaching, living the life of a renunciate. In India, they call it as a sannyasi. And Krishna was saying, no, I want you to stay in the world and do your duties. Continue with the rituals and everything that's been enjoined upon you. And within this world of your commitments, in this world, you gain this knowledge. And Arjuna got really confused. And he felt, you don't think I'm a qualified student. I'm very confused by what you're saying. Maybe you don't think that I'm good enough to learn this teaching. And so he straight out asked Krishna this. You're confusing me. I know that when I'm ready for knowledge, I'm supposed to take sannyasa and go to the forest. And you're telling me to stay here, and it just boggles my mind. I don't understand. So he says that. So now Krishna is going into great depth explaining to him the importance of being in the world with a certain attitude. Okay, so that's where we are now. So he starts out in verse 10 talking about Prajapati, talking about the Lord as Ishwara. And he says, the Lord, having created all of the beings, this whole creation, having created the creation along with all of the beings, all of you, right? Together with yajna. Yajna means together with an understanding of Ishwara and all of the duties that are enjoined upon you and all of the rituals and worship and all of these things that are enjoined upon you as a human being. The Lord, having created all of that, then he said, let all of this, let the Vedas, let all of this that has been enjoined upon you, and let the Vedas, the scriptures themselves that enjoined all of this on you, let this help you to grow and help your family to grow. And let this act as what he called a kamaduk for you. Let all of this be some act as a kamaduk, means one, something that will fulfill you completely all of the way. But the kamaduk is really called is the cow. There's a whole story about this. The Kamadhenu was a cow that was the cow of a great sage, Vasishta. So the cow of a great sage, and the king came to visit this sage one day. And the Kamadhenu was able to supply to the whole retinue, to 1,000 people, all the food, take care of them completely. All of it coming out of this one cow. And so the king said, I want that cow. Could you give me the cow, that cow? After all, he's the king. He can ask for anything. I want the cow for myself, because the cow will give anything and everything. But Vasishta said, you know, this cow won't do that for you. It won't be able to do that for you. To do that, for the Kamadhenu to do that, you have to be what they call a Brahmarishi. Right? You have to be somebody who has realized, who has understood. And so then the king said, well, then, okay. I want this cow, so I will become a Brahmarishi. Yeah? And so he did all kinds of tapas and austerities and meditations and tried to control his anger and his impatience and all of these things and worked and worked and worked on and worked. And but then finally, one day, he did understand. And in fact, he lost his desire for the cow because of his understanding. And and so, at that time, the cow became his also. So, the idea here is that the Vedas that end in the whole Vedas that end in the Upanishads are a scripture, a way of life that are meant to take you to that natural Kamadhenu, to discover that wholeness, the wholeness that is actually your own nature. It's actually your own nature. But to do that, the Vedas have given a way of life and an appreciation of how to be in this life in such a way that your mind will enjoy a natural shanti, a natural peacefulness that will then allow you to be what we call an adhikari, or qualified for really understanding the depth of the knowledge that the Upanishads have to give. And so now he's going to explain some of these relationships. So he starts by saying, may you propitiate in your attitude, may you worship and nourish all of the devas, all of the gods. Now what they mean by devas, so bhavyata, may you worship all of the gods, anena, by this. By the Vedas, by the rituals, by the karmas that the Vedas have given you. May you worship them all as they're to be worshipped. Now, what do they mean by the gods? If you think of God, the one God, the Lord, who projects as this entire infinite creation, within this infinite creation, there are many, many capacities. Each deva, each capacity, or each order, if we were to break the whole manifest creation into an order, then each order, we look at that order from the standpoint of an aspect of the conscious being, then that order itself becomes a deva. Like the one who is responsible for the winds, that part of the God. Responsible for the winds, responsible for the waters, responsible for for sight, they're responsible for light, responsible for your sense of hearing. All of these are part of the infinite order of the creation. So each one of those is considered to be a devata. So now, if you look at it like this, you have hearing, you have sight, you have the sense of touch, five sense organs. You have what we call organs of action, your hands, your feet, your speech. These are things that the body is able to do. The sense organs allow you to take in. Now, say if you just realize these as your capacities. These are mine. Right? These are mine. You don't realize that they are given, that they're part of a greater order. In other words, our ability to see. Right? It's not just I that have the ability to see. Sight is part of the order. I can grasp. The ability to grasp is part of the order. So what if I, instead of just taking this as being something that belongs to me, that I am the creator of, I recognize and I acknowledge actually the one who is responsible for this order. Right? So I am enjoying, I'm an enjoyer of the order and of this creation, and so I should propitiate and acknowledge that order which I am enjoying. Does everybody get what I say? If I can see, then I should propitiate the Lord, worship the Lord, thank the Lord, be grateful to God for that ability, that sight exists. Do we put it like that? That sight exists. So what he says is here, may you propitiate, may you worship, or may you recognize that relationship of the gods by this, through this teaching of karma yoga, through your karmas, through the actions that you do. And then, those devas, te devaha bhavayantu vaha, those devas will give back to you. Right? It's not one way. You honor them, you recognize them, and they recognize you. So it's a two-way thing. So then he says, parasparam bhavayantaha, recognizing each other mutually, worshipping, propitiating each other mutually like that, then what? Shreyaha param avapsyata. Doing that, understanding that, you will gain shreyas. The param shreyas. Parama shreyas means the highest shreyas, means liberation. So, karma yoga itself, or this understanding of being in relationship to Ishvara, means you're recognizing this entire order as the Lord, and you recognize yourself as being in relationship to it. That itself is all of this. All of a sudden now, just with that type of recognition, you're no longer alone. You are part of a total. Right? If you think of it, just to think of how profound this is, really. If you have it your own dream or imagination, you can see clearly that every part of that imagination is part of the total fabric. Like nothing is apart from it. Every single part of your imagination is included within the order. Now, what if the characters in your imagination, imagine this now, the characters in your imagination acknowledged the order and the totality of that imagination. They recognized, I am part of this greater totality, and I honor that totality. And I am part of that greater totality, which is a conscious being. You see, right now, these individuals, now within the imagination is the example I'm using, they don't have self-knowledge at this point. Right? But what they do have is a knowledge and an appreciation of themselves as part of Ishvara, as part of the Lord. Right? The knowledge gets deeper, but this is all that is being asked for at this time. The Vedas teach in this way, and they say, you know, you propitiate all of the devas. You propitiate this order and give thanks to this order, and the devas in turn will propitiate you and take care of you. So it's an acknowledgement of this creation as a conscious being, and all of the different parts are in relationship to you. You be grateful to it. It will help you. Like that. So that's this verse. And that recognition will lead through jnanam, through knowledge, to moksha, to liberation. Okay, so that's this verse. Then he goes on. So let's do the next verse. Verse 12. Ishtan bhogan hivo devaha. Ishtan bhogan hivo devaha. Dasyante yajna bhavitaha. Dasyante yajna bhavitaha. Taradatan apradayabhyaha. Kardatan apradayabhyaha yo bhunkte stena evasaha yo bhunkte stena evasaha. He says now is the devas, the gods, the aspects, these aspects of the whole, right? These devas, yajna bhavitaha, who have been propitiated by yajna, means by this attitude of karma yoga, right? And by these karmas and by these rituals. These devas, ishtan bhogan hi vaha, they will dasyante, they will give to you ishtan bhogan, the things that you desire. It's like saying the Lord will give to you the things that you desire, the things that are needed by you. The Lord will give. The Lord whom you have propitiated, that you are respecting, and all of those devas that you are respecting, this creation, this life, you propitiate them, and they will propitiate you. How? By giving those things to you that are desired, the things that are necessary to be a human being, those desired things, those will come to you. And so then it says, Tair Datan Apradaya yebhyaha yo bhunkte stena evasaha. Forgot to do the sandhi. I'm just going to read through the sandhi for those who want it. Okay. And then I'll go to the second line. Ishtan bhogan hi vaha devaha dasyante yajna bhavitaha taihi tatan apradaya ebhyaha yaha bhunkte stenaha eva saha. The gods who have been propitiated through yajna, they give to you, to all of you, it's in the plural, they give to all of us, they give, literally, they give to all of you, us, those things that are desired. The person who enjoys those things which are given, datan means given by them, the person who enjoys those things that are given by them without offering back to them, right? Without giving, propitiating, without offering something back to them, enjoying what has been given, such a person is a stena. Stena means a thief. The person who takes but doesn't give back in return. Right? So all of these things have been given. This person enjoys all of them, right? But then just walks away without any acknowledgement. So such a person is like a thief. It actually says it's only a thief indeed, actually. So Krishna's making it, and Lord's making a point here. He's saying this is important, you know. It's important, you know, to recognize Ishwara. It's important to recognize what you've been given and to give back. And how do you give back? It's just with your gratitude. It's just with your prayer. It's just with your acknowledgement. You know, like for instance, in India, and in here, in our own tradition here, how many people say grace at for dinner? We always do it. In our family, even now, you know, it's just, we have to say grace. It's just a family tradition. But in India, they always do that. Because the food, all of the food, everything says, we'll see later, everything is given. It's all given from the Lord. And so before you take, you give back that, you know. Even say if we teach a class in India, like we do that here because it's part of our tradition, but if you teach a class, you always pray to Bhagawan. There's always some, you give a prayer to the Lord, we're thanking that we can have this class, and may all of us be in good health, you know. May the Lord bless all of us. May we all be in good health, you know. And may the Lord be looked down upon us kindly, and may we also include the Lord. So these are all the Shantipatas, right? There's all different kinds of them, but they're always an acknowledgement. In fact, any new beginning, there's always prayers and rituals that are done. There's a daily routine of prayers and rituals that are done. Before eating, before cooking, there's prayers or acknowledgements or rituals that are done. And they can become very rote also, mm-hmm. right? They, just like I remember, you know, when we would say the blessing. It's rote, you know. But what happens now here, when you start for say a spiritual person, all of a sudden all of these things become meaningful. The roteness goes away, and you understand the importance of it, the importance of that acknowledgement, and how crass it is. This is just this. So Krishna feels the freedom to tell Arjuna, you know, you don't do it. Isn't it like being kind of like being a thief? You know, you're just taking. You know, and then, you know, scurrying off. And so, that's what he says for that. And now he gives the counterexample. Yagnishishtashinasantaha. Yagnishishtashinasantaha. Munchante sarvakilbishaihi. Munchante sarvakilbishaihi. Munjate te tukham papaha. Bhunjate te tugham papaha ye panchanti atmakaranat ye panchantyatmakaranat. Let me break this in deep. Yajna shishta ashinaha santaha muchante sarva kilbishahi bhunjate te tu akam papaha ye panchati atma karanat. He says, those people who are what we call yajna shishta ashinaha santaha. We can take santaha, there's different ways of taking santaha. Swamiji does both ways. Santaha can mean just a person, a good person. A person who follows Dharma, right? Such a person, they enjoy what is left after having offered to the gods. Here's yajna to the Lord. After having offered to the Lord, you ashinaha, you enjoy, you eat what is left over, right? After having made that offering. So a person, that's really the karma yoga attitude in a sense, right? So what comes to me, I accept as prasad from the Lord. You know, as prasadam from the Lord in India, I don't know if you've been to an Indian temple or not, but when you go to an Indian temple, there's a ritual that is done to the deity, to the form of the Lord in the temple. And then after the ritual has been done, and all kinds of offerings of food and flowers and water, all of these offerings have been made to the Lord. Then, after that ritual is completely finished, then the pujari who has been doing the ritual will collect up all of the flowers and the water and the food and the fruits and whatnot and bring it out to the people who are attending the puja and offer that as prasad. And all of those people then will accept that prasadam, that offering, with all gratitude. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a flower, or it could be some water, you know, or some kumkum that you put on your forehead, or it could be a whole meal. It could be, we don't know what it would be. But it's always received, right? It's always been offered to, what's been offered to the Lord is now being received. And so that's the attitude, right? What you're receiving, the whole life that you're receiving is really, you know, being given from the Lord. So if you take it like that, in that way, then the whole thing has been offered to the Lord. So such a person who receives, and see if we take it in terms of food, whatever that you're eating now is what is left over after having offered to the Lord, right? So with that attitude, that person, munchante sarvakil bishahi, that person is then liberated from all sins, right? All impurities. And then, but in the next line he says, bunjate te tu agam, he says, papaha, ye panchati atma karanat. He says, but the people, a person, those people who eat the food, right, panchati, they cook the food, only thinking of themselves. Like, say you cook the food, it's only for your own sake. I'm cooking the food so that I can eat it. You don't think about the Lord, or you don't think about the whole. Those people are papis. They're sinners. And sinners is not a good translation for papis. But what it means, so let me give a better translation. It's often, if you read it in translation, it will be sinner. But a person who's a papi is a person who their behavior causes pain. In other words, the result of the behavior will cause that person pain at a later time, right? Whereas the result, if the behavior is such that it's productive of happiness, then that's dharma. The behavior is productive of your happiness and your well-being. That's dharma and what we would call punya. But if a person's behavior is something that is not going to be productive in terms of their own or others' well-being, then that is called papa. And so papas, people who are papis, right, are people whose behavior, right, is going to cause them pain. So that's really the way to understand. We don't have a translation of it really in English. So these people, if they're doing it only to feed themselves, then that behavior is going to cause them pain. And what they eat also is agam. Agam is a word for sin. Is papa. So if we use the word papa, that what they eat also is papa. Right? They have another, there's something more in the tradition about this that is kind of hard to explain because it's not exactly, it's just different. It's a different way of viewing things. But in their tradition, when you say you go into the kitchen and you light the fire, right? And then you grind food, you grind your food, and you also have a big clay pot and you put water in the pot and you've grinded your food and you've lit the fire. So there's all of these different utensils that you use for the act of cooking. And in the process of preparing the food, a lot of there can be a lot of things that are killed. Insects are killed, bugs are killed, all kinds of things. So that's its own papa. Things are unwittingly being killed. Not intentionally, unwittingly, you know. And then through your own carelessness, things can be killed. And so to avoid any papa around that, there are different prayers and rituals that are being said in order to neutralize the effects of your eating, you know. Now, to understand the sensitivity of this, you know, even when they go to mow the fields, you know, to cut all the grass from the fields, they will do rituals and prayers to the grass and to all of the creatures that will be harmed by doing that. And they pray to the grass, you know, thank you. They give gratitude to the grass and gratitude to the plants and gratitude to the creatures that might be hurt during that process. So there are certain rituals and prayers that are always said. So too, before a meal is being prepared, there are certain prayers and rituals that are being said, thanks and gratitude to the plants that are going to be, you know, consumed, and thanks and gratitude to all anything that may be harmed, certain rituals and prayers and all these type of things, to just remove all of the papa that could accrue from that activity, right? So it's being addressed on that level also, right? On just that very simple level, you know, all of this is taking place. All of these creatures have given their life for you. All of these plants are, you know, being cooked for your sake. And there's no acknowledgement on your part. How can you eat them? How do you feel? What kind of person would eat that, having not given some thanks or sensitivity to that sacrifice? And so these rituals are considered very, very important. But if you take that understanding of that sensitivity and then extend it to the way that you respond to what's given to you in this creation, right? Because you take a lot from the creation, but if you look at it as all being given to you, that means everything that's being given to you as prasad from the Lord. Then there's not going to be, oh, I only got the flour, I didn't get the meal, or I only got the water, I didn't get the fruit. It's all considered as prasadam. So there's a certain very sacred attitude that's being held in the whole Vedic culture, right? And that attitude is something that's passed on from family to family to family, and that if the Vedas are in the living Vedas, all of these rituals and things are learned by the children, and they take you all the way through the life. And so now Krishna is kind of bringing all of these attitudes to the forefront for Arjuna. You know, and he hasn't stopped yet. We're stopped. We're going to stop now. But there are several more verses to go just in this, you know, in this particular type of understanding, you know, understanding the Ishwara. Okay, so we'll do more next time. Another whole set of verses.
I was just wondering, why is it that food is specifically mentioned in regard to papa?
Okay, let's do our closing meditation. Yeah, we'll do a meditation for a minute, and then we'll do that. Okay. Just a couple minutes. Thanks. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.